When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey friends, we have another great listener question, and this one gives us a real international flavor because it comes to us all the way from Germany, and it's a fascinating question on a couple levels. One is it has to do with separation anxiety from the perspective of the child and the parent, because both can go through separation anxiety. And I also found it fascinating because of an interesting way that they transition their children into kindergarten. And we're going to spend some time talking about that today. I'll probably, if we get a chance, share a little bit of my own personal separation anxiety story from when I was a kid. We are here with the Wonder of Parenting podcast, as always. My name is Tim Wright, along with Dr. Michael Gurian. And Michael Gurian is here to dispense all of his wisdom. 62 years worth of wisdom. Are you 62 yet?
I'll turn 62 in April.
All right. I'm just a little bit ahead of you then.
You're a little ahead of me, yeah.
So we are brought to you, as always, by our good friends at the Center of Place of Hope. And it's because of their sponsorship that we can bring these to you each week free of charge. And they're honored to do so. And we're delighted to let you know about the great work that they do up in Seattle. You can access them on wonderofparenting.com, wonderofparenting.com. And the work Greg Jantz is doing up there is incredible. And Greg is a good friend of both of us. We've done a podcast with Greg before. Both Michael and I have worked with him in the past. He's just got a big heart and really cares about helping people navigate the challenges of life. So we encourage you to check that out, as well as everything else there on wonderofparenting.com. So as I mentioned, this question comes to us from a friend in Germany, a listener in Germany, and it's a rather long email, but it's a really important one. And so I'm going to read just the first paragraph that raises the questions, and then Michael's going to summarize for us the essence of the email, because there really is some fascinating stuff there that we want you to hear. So here's the intro to the question. I was wondering if you could do an episode on how a child adapts to non-parental supervision, i.e. kindergarten, at an early age from a science perspective. How does the separation from the primary caregivers, like mom, dad, or grandparents, and being attended to by other adults affect him? So we're probably talking about a son here. Is it actually good or bad for the child from a developmental point of view to be around other kids at the cost of being away from mom and dad? Is there a shift in that at certain ages? And also, if at all, how can the transition be made easier? Is it good or bad if a kid cries when a parent is leaving? Or does it mean nothing at all, and is this just a primal urge? And every parent has had this experience of dropping a child off somewhere, be it a school, preschool, nursery care, even grandparents' house, and the child cries. And there's that gut-wrenching moment of separation. And, you know, there are probably a few parents who've dropped their kids off for the first day of kindergarten and sat in their cars and cried. Mm-hmm. So, Michael, we're going to talk about separation anxiety, but there was some really interesting stuff here that that our friends in Germany do in terms of transitioning their kids during kindergarten. And so give us a little summary of what you read and what you saw in that email.
Okay, yeah, and then we'll return to these questions. So this the writer then talks about, she lives in Germany, her many of the kids start kindergarten at age one. So we would mean preschool here, actually between 12 to 18 months. And her 18-month-old son is now actually starting. So this is all experiential for her. In German kindergarten, she says, there's a system called Eingewöhnen. I hope my college German came back, which she translates as getting used to make the start easier. So it lasts several weeks. When the child starts kindergarten, the caregiver goes through the process with the child. Usually it's the mom, could be someone else. For the first couple days, gradually they separate. She leaves the room for 15 minutes, half hour the next day, 1 hour the day after, right? So it's gradations. And then after several weeks, the child gets used to separation, she says, and just spends more time comfortably. So it is different, as Tim, as you were saying, maybe it happens somewhere in the U.S., but we're mainly used to it later, and the child has just dropped off.
Right.
And so she likes it. She likes the kindergarten, this mom says. It's all good. But she said she's noticed that that she thought that if they went through this process of sort of titration of the parent, that the child would get used to it. But now it's been many, many weeks later, and the child still has good days and bad days. So it's not as if it's universally successful for this child. The child still cries some days, doesn't cry other days when she leaves. And then she says, kind of finishes off with saying, this is about detachment from the parent, and mainly the primary caregiver. The child is no longer able to trust that primary caregiver is still there, is what she's saying. And so what's the effect on the child? And then she says, well, Germany may not be of interest to your listeners. I'm sure the actual questions about detachment and separation are important. And that kind of completes it. And of course, we want to thank her because what Germany does is very interesting to us. And the questions are universal. So to return back to her questions, how does the separation from primary caregivers, mom, dad, grandparents, and being attended by other adults affect the child? So one at a time. Yes, that kind of socialization is really great, actually, for the child, you know, as long as the new attachment figures are trustworthy, which we're going to assume they are, and they are attaching. The vacuum, if there's going to be trauma, and let me define that. By trauma, I'm going to mean something sustained that would have a negative effect on the child's development. The child is in a kind of high-stress moment that appears to be trauma when the child is crying, but then the parent leaves. And then, as most of us know as parents, we call the school, and the school will say, oh, yeah, once you left, 3 minutes later, she wasn't crying anymore.
Right.
Right? So we want to just factor that in, that yes, that's a high-stress moment, but that would not be what I would mean by a trauma. If there's a child of 1 year old, of 18 months old, of 2 years old, who's placed into a situation where there are just, you know, gobs of other children and one caregiver, you know, and 20 or 30 kids, that could be traumatic because there actually won't be attachment. That one person just can't do 30 kids. Be very hard to do 20 kids of that age. We would like to see the ratio be much, much smaller so that there can be attachment, because the job of the brain at this age, we want to remember, is attachment, separation. The job of that brain and our job as caregivers for that brain, you know, it's not cognitive, really. It's not about, we want to read to that child, but we're not trying to get the child to develop word centers, that kind of thing. Our primary job is attach, separate. And most in that age group of 12 months, 18 months, it's going to be, you know, attachment. So the only time I would worry, I'll just say to parents, the only time I worry is if your child in that age group is going somewhere with a really high child to adult ratio. But it is great for the child to go to a place for socialization, to go to a place where there are a bunch of other kids, not 30 in that room, but, you know, 5, 7, 8, something like that. And then one or two trusted caregivers. So they always can go over, you know, to that caregiver for attachment as they experience a stressor with another child or a stressor internally because they don't understand something and they cry. They can always go, you know, to the attachment object, the teacher and teacher's aide. That's a great situation, and it's great for the child. That said, it may not be great for every one-year-old. You know, that's pretty young. So we as parents have to sort of know what is the right age for our child. In the German system, she's saying it happens between 12 and 18 months. I think there would be a lot of parents here in the U.S. that probably would not, if they don't have to, would probably not give the child over to a larger child care system at 12 months, maybe 18, certainly by 2. But in the U.S., we generally kind of wait for potty training, except for infant care. You know, we generally wait to put them in a preschool like this for the time they potty trained. So that first question, then her next one is it good or bad from a developmental point of view to be around other kids? Absolutely. Great. And she says, but what about the cost of not being around mom and dad? The child is going to be around mom and dad a lot, and also grandparents a lot. So there isn't really a cost, unless the child's entering a system where the child will be around other kids, but will not have enough attachment from the caregiver adults. So I'm going back to that only caveat. And then is there a shift in that at certain ages? And also, if at all, how can the transition be made easier? So, you know, the transition's probably going to be easier as we get closer to 2 years than 1 year. A little more development for the child. And by around 2 years, every child is different, but by around 2 years old, the child is naturally trying to separate a little bit anyway. And what we call the quote-unquote terrible twos, or the terrific twos, are a time when that child is trying to individuate, so away from primary caregiver. So for some kids, that's just going to be an easier age, between 2 and 3. And I would say if the child is between 2 and 3 and the child is crying, it's, you know, don't leave, that it's even more likely that once the parent leaves, the child will stop crying right away. That won't work in every case, but it'll be more likely because the child's had yet another year of development, yet another year of wanting to try to individuate. At 1 year old, I again just think that parents should be very careful and really look at that caregiving environment and make sure that that adult will attach to my child, because my child at 1 year old is still kind of an infant. And then lastly, is it good or bad if a child cries when a parent is leaving, or does it mean nothing at all and it's just a primal urge? Generally, it would not qualify as a significant trauma. And it's just like some parents will just let their kids cry themselves to sleep at a certain point. And it's not harming the child. And again, every parent needs to know when that's the developmental, when the developmental moment has come for that. With generally by 2, you know, again, like I said, wouldn't worry. By 1, maybe you have a little worry, and so you're watching it. And if this crowd, if this 1-year-old cries for an hour after the child leaves, then I think you make other decisions. You know, that's going to be a long, long time. If the child cries for 5 minutes, you know, I wouldn't worry about that too much, because the caregiver, that adult caregiver, will hopefully and should pick up this child, rock this child. The child will feel the attachment again, and will get rid of the separation anxiety. So, what do you think of that?
Yeah, so if a child is surrounded by a lot of people at a young age, say, you know, grandmas and grandpas are involved in the life of the kid, the child, you know, grandma and grandpa do babysitting, uncles and aunts do babysitting, can that be one way to ease a child into other environments? Can that help with separation anxiety?
Oh, absolutely. The more adult contact the child is getting, healthy adult contact, and a healthy child contact that the child gets, the more the child is going to separate from that primary caregiver, because he or she is used to these other people. And then, as you've described, adults, aunts, uncles, you know, grandmas, grandpas, that child bonds with them and so has a lot of practice at bonding with people who are not primary caregiver. And while there are two primary givers, let's say we're going to use a heterosexual family, mom and dad, let's say it's intact, you have two there. But generally, to sustain that family, one of those caregivers is actually going to have to be working a lot outside the home. So while that person is a primary caregiver, still the daily primary caregiving is going to be the other one, unless somehow they can both work out of the home. So it's generally the bonding with that one person. And let's say in most cases it's mom, not at all. But let's say since she is a mom, we'll use that. She is the primary caregiver of this child. If this child's been with all these other adults, then this child has rehearsed the process and has gotten used to not being with mom. And so in that scenario, it should be easier for the child to then bond with these other adults in this child care system. So yes, in general, I would say yes.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so one of the things we like to do with these questions is start with the question, which we did, and then go off on our tangents related to the question. And so I want to do that a little bit because separation anxiety is a big issue for some parents, and everything always depends on the personality of the child, family dynamics, and so on and so forth. So just a little story from my life. I have a vivid memory of being in first grade. Didn't have any issues in kindergarten, but being in first grade in my first couple days in first grade, having to hold back tears because I wanted to be home, and was now I interpret it and understand that there was some sort of separation anxiety going on. And it turned out in my particular life, so remember now, we're a tangent, we're not addressing the question. In my particular life, I did end up having separation anxiety issues that traced itself back to my mom, who was gone a lot because she was in the hospital many, many times when I was a small kid. So when you're looking at separation anxiety, when do you begin to ask yourself the question, is this just normal, or are there some other issues going on in the life of my child?
Yeah. And then you're over in the trauma. Like you were traumatized by your mom being in the hospital so much, and that disturbed attachment, right? There would have been a little bit of, not necessarily broken, but somewhat disturbed attachment.
Yes, yeah, that's well said.
Yeah, and so you are carrying that trauma. Things resolve or stabilize, let's say, with your mom, I'm assuming, but you still carry that trauma, and then you get to this moment, and the trauma hits you when you have to separate. And the thing is that the answer is going to be a both and. I mean, to some extent, if you're carrying that sort of trauma, having to face the adversity and move through it is actually not unhealthy. I mean, it is okay.
Yep.
And you have turned out well. And the people around you, I don't know if they knew anything about this or how they handled it, but I'm guessing the people around you, when you had those experiences, came to help you. I'm guessing that. Is that correct?
Like, well, I hid that pretty well.
So, oh, you hit it.
Yeah. Nobody really knew about it until years later. But there. So I don't know if I actually gave off signs for my folks, my family, that there were some issues there about separation trauma, or you know what you said, the disturbances. But for some kids, I'm guessing, and you mentioned some of them, the child who cries for an hour after being dropped off at the nursery. And so on. Those are some things that parents want to be aware of. And then you start to ask other questions about what's going on in the life of my child. What might have caused that disturbance or trauma?
You're right. And in your case, yes, you've given a great example. Another reason it can happen, like a child is crying a lot, and not just one day, an hour, let's say, but you know, a number of days, a lot,
yep,
is the child could have what we call an introverted personality.
Yes.
So is a very shy child, let's say. That kind of separation anxiety can crop up more for that child because the child has been in so safe with the primary caregivers or caregiver, and then now suddenly is thrown into a social environment. And for shy children, I think it's even doubly the reason to get them into preschool or into child care, into that kind of socialization, and grandmas and grandpas and extended family if you have them, to get them with a lot of other people early, because it's great for them because it helps them develop their own assets to kind of fight against the shyness, let's say, and to just feel more comfortable in the world. But that people can look for that. Anyone listening can look for that. If like dad was incredibly shy or mom was incredibly shy, you've passed that genome, you know, that part of your genome onto at least one of your kids, and then you might have your older one didn't cry much or cried a little bit and then was done. But your second child goes into kindergarten or even younger, you know, a toddler goes into preschool. And this one is having a lot of trouble. Well, you may not have done anything wrong, right? I mean, the parents are good parents. It's just that this personality is different and we'll need to give a little more TLC to this personality. So you'd look for trauma and you'd look for personality differences. Those would be the two primary things if the child's crying a lot.
And then, so let's say the child is crying a lot. You've got, and it could either be separation anxiety or it's a child who's got this shyer personality. What do parents do to sort of help their child navigate that anxiety that they're experiencing?
Well, you meet with, what I suggest is meeting with the other caregivers. So let's say it's a preschool situation, meeting with those people. Certainly getting a professional, if you feel like you need a pediatrician or, you know, a professional to give you some insight who knows this child. And you're meeting with everyone and you're kind of making decisions. And the decisions start with, you know, with mom and dad or two moms, two dads. It starts in the nuclear unit saying, okay, what do we think is the right decision? And then it fans out and gets more opinions. What would be the right decision? Do we wait 2 weeks of crying an hour a day? Do we wait 1 week? Gather data, you know, be a citizen scientist, basically, of your child. Ask the caregivers, okay, cries for an hour, but then what happens? Oh, well, the rest of the day, she's having a great time. Okay, that's good data. Or the rest of the day, she is isolated and she doesn't play with the other kids. We need that data. And then after, you know, like a few weeks, whatever is the threshold of pain that the parents can go through with this crying for an hour and that the preschool can go through, then you make a decision. And if the child is crying and isolated and socially isolated in that environment, I think you'd take the child out. You'd look at other options. If the child cries for an hour for the first week, but then the second week, a half hour, and then the third week, 5 minutes, then, and the child's having fun in that environment, then you'd say, okay, this was just a hard transition, but we've worked through it. And this child's okay. So I think you make the decision by gathering data, watching it for a while, realizing that one day of crying is not a trauma.
Right.
Right. It feels really bad, but it's not necessarily harming the child. And this goes back to her question. Is it a primal urge? For a lot of kids, it is a primal urge. And it is their way of processing that they feel like they might not be safe in this environment, because their whole safety was about their primary caregiver. But then they're done crying. They notice they are safe in this environment. It takes them a few weeks to realize it. And then they realize they're safe. And that primal urge changes. And they don't have to express to the world how unsafe they feel, right? They now just have fun in that environment and they feel safe. And then when they come home, they're just as loving to their mom or their dad. And that's another thing for parents to realize. Just because your child cries for a certain period of time, again, I'm assuming it's not traumatic, that everyone's agreed, okay, this is what it ought to be. Your child doesn't love you any less, and you don't love your child any less. This was just one of those obstacles that kids face as they're growing up. And growing up is about attachment, but it's also about separation. It's about oneness, but it's also about separation. And kids need to individuate. So there isn't anything inherently harmful in a child crying and individuating and feeling safe in a strange environment and making that strange environment feel safe. It is all part of the normal process.
When do you look at your child and the anxiety seems to be so overwhelming that you say, we need to sit with a professional and see what's going on?
Yeah, well, we'll take this scenario. Well, let me back up. Anytime you think that your child is having ongoing anxiety, I think it is worth consulting with someone, starting out with others in your community and saying, do you think my child seems, you know, abnormally anxious? So this is going to be grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, this sort of family system or teachers, the big system around you who are interacting with your child. Find out, because sometimes the child is actually acting anxious with you, but is not with others. So that's good data to know. Maybe the child only feels safe to act anxious with you, Or maybe the child is seeming anxious and acting anxious with the parents and not with everyone else because actually there's some kind of power struggle or something going on between parents and child. So it's good to know that. But then if you, let's say you get to where you say, oh, wow, you know, this child is suffering not only anxiety around me, but I've learned from the systems around that taking care of my child, that the child is feeling anxiety in all these other settings, then you'd start looking, it's dependent on the age of the child, but you'd start looking at anxiety disorders or something going on, and you would seek a professional. I don't think at 1 year old, you know, young, you're, yeah. Again, we want to get a little older. We want to really be able to see what's going on. And we need to always remember that some kids are wired for more anxiety that comes in on the genome. And so being conscious of that and helping the child through the fears can set the foundation, and you may not need to go to a professional, right? I mean, you can by just knowing, oh, this child's just like I was at five, and here's what worked for me when I was five. This is what my parents did with me. Getting a pet, or there's so many things that you could do with an anxious child, helping the child process, having the child draw, doing positive feedback, reality checks, you know, all of those tools that you'd use. And then you kind of see for a month or two, okay, is it getting better? No, the child's incredibly anxious. Okay, we need to go to a professional. And then you start a path. And you may end up at the end of that path that your child has an anxiety disorder, and it's good that you learned that. But I wouldn't jump on that right away. I would give this some time and let the system tell us if this child is anxious in every part of the system. And then seek the professional.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And what should parents look for to see if perhaps the issue isn't their child, the issue is them and their own separation anxiety issues?
Yeah, that's what I meant about it could be a dynamic between the child and the adult. So let's say, so the more anxious the adults are, it's very possible the child's going to get more anxious.
Right.
The child's going to mimic the adult. And let's assume now that this child does not have an anxiety disorder and is not, you know, hardwired for anxiety, but that it's a dynamic issue. And in that case, it's going to probably be the adults that are going to get help from the professionals, because they're going to learn, they're going to observe themselves, observe each other, and then the system around the child will be saying, like the schools, the preschool, they'll be saying, oh no, she doesn't seem anxious here, she takes risks, or oh no, he doesn't seem anxious here, or maybe a little anxious for 2 minutes when you dropped her off or him off, but, you know, and then you're learning all that, and then we start having to look within and go, wow, okay, but always anxious, always saying she's afraid when I'm around. And then, you know, then we got to just remember the formula. The children are our mirrors to some extent. So then we got to look at ourselves, get help with our, from our spouse, from other people. Am I being very anxious? Am I just clutching this child? Am I so anxious of separating from this child that I'm passing the anxiety into the child? And if so, then we need to get help for that, because it's us creating the mirror of us.
So I don't want to look like I'm psychotic, but to hopefully be helpful with a little self-disclosure, my daughter went to college in England, and so the first time that she went for the first semester, Jan and I flew out there with her and we helped her get settled. And, you know, it was hard. It was hard to just walk away and see her in a country that wasn't our country. And we were 10 hours away and, you know, she's hanging out with friends, but she was far more adventurous than I was. And so she came home for Christmas break. I drove her to the airport. She was great. She was ready to go. And I cried all the way home. And I said to Jan, I will never again allow my daughter to go off to school by herself again. And it was, that was my issue. That wasn't Alicia's issue. And so sometimes we as parents can really wrestle with having to let go of our kids. And just to be aware when it's our issue versus our kids' issue, I think is really helpful as well. And we're not sensing that from our listener here. But it can be the challenge that sometimes parents project onto their kids their own insecurities and fears about letting go.
Oh yeah. And really, you're not psychotic at all. I mean, everyone, it is a primal urge to protect, and the attachment is profound. And to send a child off, you know, like I had to do it with my daughter at 22, Gabrielle, who went to the Peace Corps in China, you know, and I would keep going, Gabrielle, do you think, watch the movie Taken, you know, and then I would be, I don't have those skills, you know, if you get captured, right? I was just silly, really, in a lot of ways. And that's primal, and that's okay. And the child, you know, and you're both going to laugh about it later. You're going to both go, oh, well, okay.
All right, you're more psychotic than I am. You win.
I'm more
this one.
Psychotic, yeah. I told her to watch a movie, which she had already seen. So all of that, I think, is really normal. Crying, driving home, so normal, because the attachment is so profound with this child.
Yep.
And I would say there's nothing negative about that. I think that's all normal. And everyone listening here, if you have younger kids, right, your kids are still really young, you're going to go through so many of these times.
Yes, you are.
And don't be too hard on yourselves. Yeah. You'll do things that you'll be embarrassed by. And, you know, don't be too hard on yourselves. Ultimately, your kids will say, okay, my parent loved me.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
In a weird way, but my parent loved me.
Yeah. Well, we sure appreciate all of our listeners sending in questions, and it's really fascinating to get them when they come from other cultures. And I really am intrigued by the way that the Germans set up this system of transitioning both mom and dad and the child into a new setting where there's going to be some anxiety. So we probably could learn from that. And it certainly set up an interesting discussion for us, because all of our kids we'll go through some sort of separation anxiety from time to time. We as parents will. And Michael, the insights you had today were very, very helpful. Appreciate it again.
Oh, thank you. And thanks for your story. It's a great story.
Yep. And everybody, please check out wonderofparenting.com. Go to our Facebook page and join there and join in the discussions. And we will look forward to seeing you next time for episode number 80. Thanks.
Thank you.